Chief Judge and the judges of the United States Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces is now open and in session. God save the United States of America and this honorable court. Please be seated.
Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome to the special session of the court. We appreciate your flexibility in terms of the change of venue. We will do our best to keep our voices loud enough for you to hear all the way in the back. With the power outage, I discovered that, in fact, there isn't any ability to run an extension cord from a nuclear-powered submarine to a nearby theater. So we're going to be flexible, and we're all delighted to have all of you here today. We have one case we're going to hear this morning. Before we begin, I just want to make two administrative notes. First off, unfortunately, Judge Sparks could not be with us here today. He regrets that very much. He is, however, going to be participating on the record. That means he's fully briefed on that case. He will be listening to a recording of this proceeding, and he will be participating fully in the judges' conference when we decide the appropriate disposition of this case. Secondly, I'd like to welcome to the court Senior Judge Erdman. We've had a vacancy on the court for more than a year. Senate has not confirmed a replacement, but we are delighted to have Senior Judge Erdman here today, who came from Montana to participate. So, having said that, we shall begin. Counsel for Appellant, are you prepared to argue?
Yes, Your Honor.
Counsel for the government, are you prepared to argue?
Yes, Your Honor.
Please proceed.
Good morning, Chief Judge Olson, members of the court, and may it please the court. My name is Lieutenant Aiden Stark, and I represent the appellant. I respectfully request to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Granted.
Thank you, Your Honor. The convening authority had members identify themselves by race, and with this information, he selected an all-white panel for the trial of a black man. The government was thus required to answer the following question. Why did the convening authority solicit racial information only to select an all-white panel? A prima facie case of racial discrimination was established under the following three equal protection frameworks. First, under Avery and Alexander. Second, and alternatively, under Batson. And third, and also alternatively, under Castaneda.
Counsel, before you go on to those three arguments, did you raise the Avery and Alexander argument in the Navy Court of Criminal Appeals?
Yes, Your Honor, although the cases were not cited. Avery and Alexander's elements were established in the filings to the Navy Marine Court of Criminal Appeals, specifically at Jeter 1 on page 30 of the defense brief, and this is the first, Jeter 1 being before the case was remanded. The brief provided that, and I quote, the convening authority may not consider race when creating a members panel for a purpose other than ensuring diversity, and that the convening authority systematically created an all-white members panel for a minority accused. These are the elements under Avery and Alexander, Your Honor, and therefore Avery and Alexander was preserved, although the counsel at the lower court did not cite Avery and Alexander specifically. And I would add, additionally, the argument that a prima facie case of racial discrimination was also raised at the lower court. However, Your Honor, if this court disagrees, this is at worst a forfeiture and not a waiver, because it's clearly not a knowing and voluntary relinquishment of rights. And that's underscored by the fact that a prima facie case of racial discrimination as a result of the member selection process being non-race neutral and resulting monochromatic panel has been asserted at every stage of the proceedings from trial to the lower court to remand and until today. And those are the elements under Avery and Alexander. In Alexander, questionnaires identifying race were used to select jurors for the grand jury of an African-American accused, which resulted in an underrepresented panel. This was enough to establish a prima facie case of racial discrimination.
Now, in terms of you making your case for a prima facie case here, you cite the fact that on the original convening order, there were two blacks. Then, with the amending order, it was all white. Where is that in the record?
Your Honor, that is on the original convening order, the two members being black, is in the record from the fact-finding by the lower court.
So it only appears in the CCA's, the lower court's, opinion in this case.
There, as well as it was in a footnote, the biographies of those two members were cited in a URL to the lower court, both Jeter 1 and Jeter 2. And from that, the lower court found that those two members were black.
So that's what the lower court was basing that information on, is that citation and footnote?
That the two members are African-American, yes, sir. And that only goes towards the Batson equal protection claim. That is irrelevant for purposes of Avery and Alexander, as well as Castaneda. It's relevant for Castaneda, but it's not necessary. And I would add that even for Batson, the second element of Batson, that the government, that members of the racial group were removed, that is one way that that element can be established. The second being that an all-white panel was assembled. That in itself is a form of exclusion by the convening authority that meets that element.
Counsel, on that same point, was there any evidence or finding that the convening authority or the acting convening authority knew that on the first panel there were two black members?
No, Your Honor. Nothing in the record demonstrates that. However, the elements of a prima facie case are established under all three frameworks, and that should have been enough to compel the government to provide an explanation. That question could have been answered had the military judgment provided all of the facts.
Counsel?
Yes, sir.
Your prima facie case argument is based purely on statistics, right?
No, Your Honor.
Well, how is it not? It's all about all or none or the representation. How is it? What evidence is there in the record that suggests that is not just based on the numbers, the makeups of the panel, the makeups of the population, the makeups of the you understand?
Yes, sir. The selection procedure itself, the questionnaires are a non-race neutral member selection process, and that meets the first element under Avery and Alexander.
But what evidence is there in the record in this case that those questionnaires had any impact on who was on the jury?
There's the questionnaires themselves, and the record does establish that the convening authority used these questionnaires to select the
panel.
Right,
but there's what evidence is there in the record that those questions, the fact that certain service members marked the boxes, was used at any point in the selection of who ended up in the jury?
I understand your question, Your Honor. And the specific evidence of discrimination by the convening authority, we don't have that in the record, Your Honor, but that wasn't in the record in Avery or Alexander.
Right. So, and those are cases based off statistics, right? The statistic, the number of people who are in the pools, the number of people who are in the general population, right? That's what those cases were on. They said it's just not plausible that you had this large a number of minorities in the general population who are then not ending up in the juries. That's how the prima facie case in both those cases, that's how it proceeds. And I understand you to be saying that's how we want to proceed. But absent from the record is any evidence about what the population was that we're pulling from in this case, right?
Your Honor, that is a factual vacuum that the government should have.
Well, to be fair, the military judge invited the appellant, or at least asked the appellant, is this something you want to pursue, right? And the appellant, at that stage, declined.
I disagree, Your Honor. The appellant moved for the convening authority to provide an explanation, and through that line of questioning...
Well, okay, but I just want to establish, you want to establish prima facie case the same way they did in Avery, the same way, right?
Yes, sir.
But the problem is, the record is devoid of any information of how many African-Americans should we expect to find on this panel? How many are in the population that we're pulling from, right? I looked for it. I don't find that information anywhere in the record. Is that right?
It's not, Your Honor. That is right. However, I would point this court to Alexander, where the Supreme Court held that the court had never announced mathematical standards for the demonstration of systemic exclusion. It does not rest its conclusion on statistical improbability alone. And the court went on to discuss how the racial designation on both the questionnaire and the information card provide a clear and easy opportunity for discrimination to occur. And this is what constitutes a prima facie case.
Right, but we're dealing with unavoidable, like numbers that just couldn't be ignored, right? The discrimination was just so rampant in those cases, there was no way to ignore it, right? Here, we've got an officer being court-martialed. What is the population of African-American officers that could have served on his panel?
Your Honor, we don't know the number, but we do have the military judge's finding that the military is a diverse tapestry of people, and the waterfront was literally littered with ships at that time.
Okay, so I agree, it's not in the record, right?
Yes, sir.
So, lucky for us, we've got the internet. So I went and looked, and at least on December 31st of 2021, it's not the exact same time frame, but that's a number I'll just go with, it says about 7% of officers in the United States Navy are African Americans. Now that's not in the record, but I'm trying at least to grapple with the arguments you're before us making. And then I say, well, I can do a little math, and I can run an 8-person panel, and it tells me over 50% of the time there are going to be no African Americans if you're just doing random selection. Now, you're standing before us saying, well, we have no African American representation on this panel. It's a prima facie case of discrimination. But that seems a little bit untenable if you're going to have over 50% of panels with no African Americans on them being prima facie cases of discrimination. Like that, those numbers just don't seem to make any sense in this context.
Well, sir, what the element that I believe the court has not covered in that analysis is the non-race neutral selection procedure, Your Honor. This is not just any case where you have an all-white panel for an African-American accused. This is a case where the convening authority was soliciting racial information. And this court in Respect and Loving discussed how racial solicitations of potential jurors can be conducted for proper or improper reason. In Respect, this court held that the only proper reason it would presume would be to ensure that there was diversity on the panel. Here we don't have that because the panel was monochromatic, Your Honor.
And so, counsel, was this a singular instance where a minority service member was being prosecuted and there was an all-white panel appointed?
Is this case, Your Honor?
Yes.
Well, we also have the Castaneda claim, so no, Your Honor. There are three additional cases where this has occurred. So that is just another fact and circumstance that just further highlight how a prima facie case was of discrimination occurred. This happened four times under the same convening authority in the same year. That is
four. Four out of how many?
We don't know, Your Honor.
Right, and that's the problem, right? You want to establish a prima facie case with statistics, but you didn't make any effort, despite the invitation from the military judge, to explore what those numbers were.
Well, no, Your
right?
Honor.
And so we don't have it in the record, right? I don't know. It's four out. What is it? 4 out of 400? Is it 4 out of 10? Is it 4 out of 6? It makes a difference.
Well, Your Honor, the Supreme Court in Flowers held that requiring a defendant to investigate over a number of cases the race of persons trying the particular jurisdiction and the racial composition of the veneer and PT jury is an insurmountable burden on the defense. And Black's Law Dictionary, specifically the 8th edition, defines investigate as to inquire into a matter systemically. Here, there was an inquiry done by the defense, which was to compel the convening authority to provide an explanation, and that could have provided more statistics on the record. Unfortunately, 4 years later, with the affidavits that were collected, we have a significant spoliation issue where the convening authorities can't remember anything to include whether they discriminated by race. But this case provides an opportunity for this court to provide guidance to military judges to when the burden shifts. We're talking just about a prima facie case being established, not about dismissing the findings outright when this comes up in future cases. That could have potentially given the government an opportunity to provide information to the military judge and allow the military judge to make an informed decision as to whether there was an equal protection violation in this case. The statistics that were not completely gathered, that's the government's burden, Your Honor. Once some statistics are established, the burden shifts onto the government.
Now, what is your point in terms of the fact that the defense urged the military judge to, quote, compel the convening authority to show that there was no improper criterion considered, and argued that the military judge should at least require the government to show that there was no improper consideration of race? But the military judge shot that down.
Yes, sir.
So how does that affect your case?
That highlights how the trial defense counsel specifically articulated the elements under Avery and Alexander on page 61 of the joint appendix and how they compelled a showing by the government. That is a form of a discovery request that was brought to the attention of the military judge that the military judge denied. At that point, it's unfair to hold against the appellant that they didn't ask the right questions to the convening authority when they weren't allowed to ask those questions to the convening authority.
Well, but the military judge was making the point that you haven't made a prima facie case.
And the military judge was incorrect, Your Honor. The military judge looked at the questionnaires and thought that he was not looking at any evidence of discrimination. And for the military judge to find that, that runs contrary against Avery and Alexander itself.
So your point is, at that stage of the proceedings, in any case where there are no African Americans on the panel, the defense has established a prima facie case.
No, Your Honor.
And can jump straight to pushing the burden to the government to prove why there are no African Americans on the panel.
No, Your Honor, and I would point this court again to Loving and Respect. It's not any case with a monochromatic panel of a minority hues. The additional element of a non-race neutral selection process needs to be implemented by the government. If the government is going to employ a non-race neutral selection process and go around asking potential members to identify themselves by race, but the resulting panel is not representative, as this court held its respect.
So we have a problem here that's a problem of this court's own making. So is race a permissible factor that a convening authority can use according to the UCMJ when putting together a panel?
It can be, Your Honor, under Loving.
Well, under the text of the code.
Under the text of the code.
Is it one of the factors expressly authorized for the convening authority to use?
No, Your Honor, and that's why Article 25 is a race-neutral statute.
Right.
The case law has provided.
Right, so is that the problem? Right? Is the real solution to this problem that we need to reach back and say that, you know, when we said back in the 50s and 60s that convening authorities could use race, it's not authorized by Article 25. We were wrong. We've been wrong about this for a long time. There needs to be a race-neutral process.
Is that
the answer?
I think that is a fair answer, Your Honor. That is reading into the article itself and providing convening authorities more latitude than they're authorized by statute. However, either way, Your Honor, we still do have a prima facie. We do have a impermissible non-race application of a non-race neutral selection
process. So then your position is, as long as the questionnaires are asking potential panel members to identify their race, then if you have a panel with no minority representation, that's a prima facie case of discrimination.
Yes, Your Honor, and that's what the Supreme Court held in Avery and Alexander.
Now, counsel, on that point, it seems to me that if you ask about race, you could either use it for inclusion, which you think is permissible under our case law. You could use it for exclusion, which would not be permissible. And your point is that, well, if there's no black members on the panel, it wasn't used for inclusion, therefore it must have been used for exclusion. What about the other possibility, though, that just it wasn't used at all?
That is possible, Your Honor, and to be clear, our position is not that it must have been used for exclusion. Our argument is that it clearly was not used to make the panel more representative, and therefore it was not used for a legitimate purpose.
But it wasn't necessarily used for an illegitimate purpose if it wasn't used at all.
That's the whole point of the prima facie case, Your Honor. If it was negligently used, then the government could have provided that explanation. Ultimately, Your Honor, the burden shifted, and the military judge failed to recognize that it had shifted. Had the burden shifted, we would not have the spoliation issue. We would not have a convening authority who answered 12 of 19 questions with "I do not recall" or "I don't know." We would not have an acting convening authority who answered 16 of 19 questions with "I do not know." And ultimately, neither of them could remember if they improperly considered race when they selected this panel. At no point could they simply say they did not consider race. In Alexander, the Supreme Court stated that affirmations of good faith in making individual selections are insufficient to dispel a prima facie case. And in Santiago de Vela, this court's predecessor held that if these general assertions were accepted as rebutting a defendant's prima facie case, the Equal Protection Clause would be but a vain and illusory requirement. Finally, Your Honor, I would note that also from Santiago de Vela, this court held that if the Fifth Amendment equal protection right to a jury selected without invidious discrimination applies to courts martial just as it does to civilian juries, then the protective framework of Castaneda, or any equal protection framework, I would add, must apply to them as well.
Counsel, I see your time has run. Judges, do you have any further questions?
Thank you.
You still have your time afterwards. Government.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Chief Judge Olson, Senior Judge Erdman, members of the court, and may it please the court. I'm Captain Tyler Blair, and along with Colonel Joseph Jennings, I represent the United States. This court should find appellant failed to make a prima facie case of racial discrimination for two reasons. First, appellant fails to provide clear evidence of discriminatory intent to satisfy existing equal protection frameworks in either Alexander or Castaneda. And second, Batson does not apply, but even if it did, appellant's claim falls short. To the first point, the presumption of regularity requires appellant to show clear evidence to make a prima facie case, and it requires a showing of discriminatory intent and discriminatory effect. He fails to show either. In Chemical Fund, Armstrong, and Hartman, the Supreme Court applied the presumption of regularity to executive-level officers conducting their official duties, which required a showing of clear evidence to overcome that presumption. This court in Bess applied the presumption of regularity to the same convening authority during the same time period when selecting members. Appellant fails to show discriminatory intent or effect.
Now, in terms of, you refer in your brief to a lack of demonstration of purposeful racial discrimination. Did the Supreme Court find that in Avery and Alexander?
No, Your Honor, the requirement...
And yet the Supreme Court found in favor of the defendant.
Yes, Your Honor, let me clarify. The Supreme Court required, the three-prong test, and the second prong required a showing of both a non-race-neutral selection process and statistical improbability to infer discriminatory intent. Supreme Court has never expected actors to admit that they committed racial discrimination. Rather, allows an accused to show, to infer racial discrimination, to infer discriminatory intent. So, appellant's proposed test is incorrect. The Supreme Court in Avery and Alexander requires a showing of both statistical improbability, as they relied on Alexander, coupled with a non-race-neutral selection process.
Now, Alexander certainly went through a statistical analysis, but in Avery, didn't the Supreme Court essentially just take judicial notice of the fact that there were any number of potential members of a jury who were black?
Yes, Your Honor. The court noted that there was a large population of African Americans in that county in Georgia, and that the resulting process yielded 0 out of 60 members.
But they did not cite any statistics or facts for that assertion. They essentially took judicial notice of the fact that in the Deep South there would have been a number of blacks who could have served in that role.
Yes, Your Honor, talked about 14% of the eligible black population, local population, and 25% of the overall population were African American in that area. And they cited that in their opinion for knowing that it was statistically improbable ending up with a panel that was 0 out of 60 African American members. And this court further, explained in Alexander that in order to make a prima facie equal protection claim, it requires a factual inquiry. The court said that there is no requirement for a specific statistical showing, but there needs to be a showing of statistical improbability. And appellant fails to do that here. The Chack Black Declaration was rejected by this court in Bess, and it should again be rejected by this court. Those three other cases besides this case that appellant cites do not show discriminatory intent or discriminatory effect. This court in Bess did not find, and neither did the trial court or the lower court, find that there was an all-white panel at Bess. In Rawlins, that appellant never raised that issue on appeal. And then in Johnson, there was not an all-white panel. As the Chack Black Declaration talks about, the convening authority specifically included 5 minority members upon that accused request.
Now, you've cited Bess a number of times. What about our decision in Respect, where this court said, where selection of members on an impermissible basis is raised by the evidence, the government needs to present affirmative evidence of benign intent beyond a reasonable doubt. So is that the standard we should use? Is it simply whether it was raised by the evidence that there was an impermissible basis for choosing the panel members?
Your Honor, the Respect decision is best understood within the UCI framework, which appellant was able to use in his case. And it's frankly an easier way for appellants to raise these claims at trial. And this is seen in Gooch. where the appellant was able to raise a UCI claim over a claim of systematic exclusion where there was an African-American accused. Was able to raise that claim merely under showing of some evidence, which is a much lower evidentiary bar than the clear evidence standard we have here. He was able to make that claim and then shift the burden to the government, requiring the government to prove harmless beyond a reasonable doubt there was no improper motive in the member selection. And it's and in Gooch, the court, this court specifically found, rejected the idea of using Batson to apply to convening authorities member selection. So again, the Chapel Act Declaration does not show the convening authority any evidence of discriminatory intent. And further, unlike Bess, unlike the appellant in Bess, this appellant never made a discovery request. Looking at the dialogue between trial defense counsel and the military judge never understood his request to be a discovery request. He, in fact, invited the appellant to make a discovery request. So there's various ways you can do this. But appellant repeatedly said they would.
But what about the quotes that I cited when the appellant's counsel was arguing? So, JA 57. The defense asked the military judge to compel the convening authority to show that there was no improper criterion considered. And then later, JA 61, asked the military judge should at least require the government to show that there was no improper consideration of race. Are you saying that there are some magic words that a defense counsel has to state in that courtroom in order to be able to learn the information they need in order to demonstrate discrimination against one of our service members?
Yes, Your Honor.
And so you're saying magic words need to be spoken?
No, Your Honor, but appellant needs to make clear what he's requesting.
How could it be any clearer than to say, I want to make sure that there was no improper criterion considered and that there was no improper consideration of race, where the whole argument was that there was a situation where, once again, fourth time, this command, same year, minority accused, all white panels. Could it be any clearer to the military judge?
2 points to that, Your Honor. The Chapel Act Declaration was not before the trial court. There was only an unnamed transcript from a court martial that was presented. And second, the way that trial defense counsel put forward his request, it appeared could be was reasonably interpreted as the military judge as a burden shifting, as requiring the government to show under a UCI framework. But he had not presented some evidence in order to rate the government to make that show.
So when it comes to an issue where the Supreme Court has weighed in repeatedly over the decades, talking about the equal protection rights of all Americans to ensure that potential juror members are not excluded on the basis of race, when that issue is raised in the courtroom at the court-martial, the military judge can just close his eyes to that concern being raised.
No, Your Honor, but the accused has to make a particular request. And the Supreme Court...
So what is the language the defense counsel was required to use here?
Hypothetically, an accused could make a claim saying we want to make an equal protection claim. We believe there's been systematic exclusion. It doesn't have to be specific, but it has to alert the military judge of what they're actually requesting. They could request statistics for the Navy. They could make a showing similar to what Judge Hardy did and what yourself did in Best in the dissent, Your Honor, talking about presenting evidence of the statistical makeup of the Navy as a whole to show systematic exclusion or to make a claim. But there has to be a particularized request, Your Honor. So, appellant fails to make a systematic exclusion claim under Alexander. He failed to, at the trial level, at the lower court, or at this court, to request or offer statistics of the racial demographics of the Navy as a whole, Naval Base Norfolk, or to request statistics for eligible members or of the members that the convening authority had available to him. Likewise, he fails Castaneda's second prong by failing to show statistical substantial underrepresentation over a significant period.
Well, what are we to make of the fact that when affidavits were required by the lower court of the convening authority, the acting convening authority, and the staff judge advocate, that the responses repeatedly, especially by the convening authority and the acting convening authority, were, I don't recall, I don't recall, I don't recall.
For those responses, Your Honor, again, that does not show any evidence of discriminatory intent on the part of the convening authority. It merely says they, in fact, do not remember. And that's why these frameworks are more useful than the one proposed by Appellant as far as Batson, because it's unlikely that an actor would get up and actually admit that they discriminated intentionally on the basis of race.
Well, in Avery, they claimed they had not engaged in racial discrimination, and that the Supreme Court found that, in fact, the case needed to be decided in favor of the defendant. So how does that fit here with your argument for the present case?
Your Honor, in Avery, the burden had shifted, and there was an opportunity for the government to present evidence at a trial court hearing, and they did offer affirmations of good faith, which were not sufficient to rebut Appellant's prima facie case. But no court has said that this appellant has ever made a prima facie case.
Well, if there wasn't a prima facie case, then why did the lower court submit the affidavits to those three people?
The lower court discussed in their opinion that they used the standard of some evidence to request the affidavits from the convening authority and the staff. That's not the standard that applies to a prima facie case of equal protection. So they likely viewed it, while the court doesn't say, likely viewed it under a UCI framework.
So you're saying we cannot consider those affidavits?
You can, Your Honor. They're part of the record.
Counsel, on that point, I understand the appellant's position to be that if we find that there's a prima facie case, the case is over, that we don't send it back because the government's already had an opportunity to present a case. Do you agree with that? If we were to find that there was a prima facie case of discrimination, that we'd have to reverse and that we wouldn't remand for further findings?
No, Your Honor, I don't agree with that. Government does not agree with that position. Washington v. Davis, Alexander v. Louisiana, the entire Supreme Court case law talks about that the government gets an opportunity to rebut after appellant is found to make a prima facie case.
But I think the point that appellant makes in the reply brief is that you already had that opportunity with the discovery that was done at the CCA level.
That's not the case, Your Honor. The government never had an opportunity to provide input for the affidavits at the CCA. There was no hearing. The government never had an opportunity to present evidence.
Well, at the lower level, the government opposed a debate hearing, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
And that's because, Your Honor, the burden had never shifted to the government, and appellant had never made a discovery request. So appellant's whole argument is predicated on the idea that the convening authority must include minorities for minority accused. But the Supreme Court powers decided that issue long ago.
Now, wait a minute. If I heard you correctly, you were just saying that the claim is that minority members needed to be included?
That's
not the argument of this appellant. It's that minority members were excluded.
Yes, Your Honor, that's the underlying basis of their claims when they make claims that the convening authority had the option of the largest naval base in the world, but chose not to select any African-American members.
Well, what about the fact that with the original convening order, there were two black officers, and 4 days before the court-martial, the acting convening authority amended that to create an all-white panel for this minority accused?
Your Honor, as the lower court...
That's exclusion, correct?
No, Your Honor. It's not exclusion for about three reasons. First, as the lower court discussed and the convening authority's affidavits discussed, standing general court-martial convening order is an administrative tool not intended for use in any particular court-martial. Second, no equal protection, no law stands for extending equal protection to a convening authority's amending convening orders. That was done every time, and there would be an equal protection claim potentially every time a convening authority amends convening order. That panel never made it to the court martial. And furthermore, there's no evidence of exclusion, Your Honor. Again, appellant never offered or requested the evidence necessary to make a prima facie case. He never requested evidence from other courts martial, never requested evidence of the eligible member pool or documentation of member selection or the staff of the Navy. Not at trial, not at the lower court, and not at this court. To the second point, this court need not make up new equal protection law by extending Batson when the unlawful command influence framework already covers these claims. Again, as discussed in Gooch, this court rejected the use of Batson for systematic exclusion in court-martial panels. The UCI framework offers an easy outlet for appellants to raise these claims under a lower level of evidentiary proof. And appellants claim that there's no constitutional scrutiny for convening authority's membership selection is incorrect. The appellant's constitutional rights to a fair panel are enshrined in Article 25 and further in Article 37, and equal protection does apply to all steps of the convening authority's member selection. And if this court extended Batson, it's unlikely appellants could ever really make a successful claim. Convening authority could merely rebut with a race-neutral explanation, and it would not
offer meaningful. And what would be wrong with that? If, in fact, went to the convening authority and said, provide a race-neutral explanation, if there is one, as to why African-Americans, black service members, were excluded from the panel.
Convening authority could merely state that they applied Article 25. And just like a prosecutor in Batson could simply be untruthful, but there is no further mechanism for an appellant to attack that. The framework set up by the Supreme Court and Alexander and Castaneda provide a meaningful way for appellants to infer discriminatory intent without actually having to get an actor, in this case a convening authority, to admit it.
So it's the government's position that Castaneda, Avery, Alexander are the correct analytical frameworks to apply here?
Yes, Your Honor, but again, like this court in Bess, because the appellant hasn't developed a claim in either, especially for Castaneda, does not need to go to decide if and how Castaneda applies to the military system, because the issue with eligible members makes a straight statistical comparison difficult. And lastly, on the Batson point, no court has ever applied Batson outside of peremptory challenges. And barring any further questions from the court, I will conclude.
Any further questions?
The United States respectfully requests this court affirm the lower court's decision.
Counsel for appellant.
Yes, sir.
Your Honor, the government has cited the presumption of regularity. This argument undermines the notion of a prima facie case itself. The Supreme Court in Avery, Alexander, Batson, and Castaneda did not look at a presumption of regularity. Neither should this court. The government argued that the Supreme Court requires a statistical improbability in Avery and Alexander, but as Chief Judge Olson highlighted, the judicial notice in Avery it applies here just as well. The military judge disagreed with the trial counsel's assertion that the military is mostly composed of white males, and the military judge found the military is a diverse tapestry of people. That is enough for this record to show that there are African Americans in the Navy. The government argued that because RESPEC involves UCI, it does not apply. However, RESPEC incorporated equal protection principles. In RESPEC, this court discussed the selection procedure based on race, even though that case involved gender. They repeatedly discussed race. And these principles clearly apply here. The government argues that the appellant did not present some evidence of racial discrimination, but the appellant presented questionnaires that were soliciting race, and that was enough for the Supreme Court in Avery and Alexander. Additionally, the appellant provided...
Again, in those cases, we've got overwhelming statistical evidence along with non-race-neutral selection criteria, right?
Not in Avery, Your Honor, as Chief Judge Olson was highlighting, and additionally...
Well, 25%, 0 out of 60, do you want to run the math on that? Or do you want to run... I mean, this is the problem. You say, well, it's not overwhelming. Well, I think if we ran the math out of a population that's 25% African-American, you get 0 out of 60... I'm going to guess it's overwhelming. Right? I didn't run that math ahead of time, but it's going to be overwhelming. What math are you dealing with?
Your Honor, I'm dealing with the math of the just what's common right. sense here.
With well, all right, you're dealing with a 7% African-American officer population and 0 out of 8, right? You want to combine that with the non-race neutral criteria, just like they did in Avery. But, like, we don't have, I don't believe, I mean, I don't see any argument from you, because you seem to want to avoid the statistics entirely, which I think is telling, that there is any overwhelming statistical, like, statistics that you just can't ignore, along with the non-race neutral selection criteria.
Your Honor, this, we have on the record that the waterfront was literally littered with ships at the time. We have a monochromatic panel but despite racial segregation.
We have no statistics in the record.
We do, Your Honor. We have multiple trials where this occurred. We have 4 members were available.
Is the multiple trials where this occurred in the record?
Yes, Your Honor. The transcript from Best was added to the record by the Trial Defense Counsel the second time they objected at Joint Appendix 61. And I see that I'm out of time.
Any further questions from the court?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. The case is now submitted. The court thanks counsel for both sides, and the court is adjourned until tomorrow morning. Now we're going to take a recess in place. The clerk.
All rise.
Okay.
The court is now in adjournment until tomorrow at 12 o'clock. If we can turn off the recording here, sir.
Please.
Yeah, please be seated.